First, we're talking to a guest who says we live in an era of irrational parenting. Despite a downward trend in crime statistics, many parents today are afraid to let kids go beyond their front yard without a grown-up along. Jennifer Senior is the author of All Joy and No Fun, The Paradox of Modern Parenthood. She wrote about irrational parenting for New York Magazine. Jen, welcome back to Central Time.
Oh, thanks for having me here.
So why do you think that modern parents are irrational?
Well, I will say my editors put that headline on there. I'm not sure I would have gone quite so far and made such a sweeping statement about all parents. I think the point is this. When it comes to safety, there are certainly cultural trends involving parenting that do not seem to be, that don't seem to correspond with what the data suggests, right? The data suggests that it's never been a safer time to let your kid play outside. It's never been a safer time to put your kid in an automobile. It's never been a safer time to let your kid walk home from a public place. And yet, we are hovering over them. We are barely letting them walk or ride a bike to school. We are incredibly protective of them in ways that suggest that the crime data would look the exact opposite. So the question is why? And the answer, I think, has to do with a variety of things, but I'll just give one for now. We defer having kids. If you're a college-educated woman, you're not going to have your first kid until you're 30. And your husband, if he's college-educated, is going to be 32 years old. And I think what this does is it makes us look at children as this enormous kind of life event and investment. We just assign a lot of significance to this experience once we finally have kids. And it makes people, extremely kind of protective of their investments in ways that they might not necessarily have been if they'd had like five kids starting from the time that they were 22.
But maybe that's a good thing, right? Maybe this hypervigilance that parents have about kids is the reason that these statistics of harm coming to kids are so low.
I would have said that. But there are two things that absolutely flat out contradict that. I mean, I looked into that thinking, well, maybe all this helicoptering is paying off. First of all, not only are stranger abduction rates falling, abduction rates within families are falling. Families are more likely to abduct kids than strangers are. And those are falling at an even faster rate, right? So why would that be the case? The other thing is that crime rates generally are falling. And adults are certainly taking advantage of this. I mean, now as an adult in New York City, a woman, I walk around at 3 in the morning by myself in neighborhoods that my parents would never in 100 years have imagined would be safe, right? We are all doing this. We are all taking advantage of plunging crime rates nationally. But we're not letting our kids take advantage of it. I mean, and if they're falling across the board if they're falling for adults, there's no reason to assume that the trend lines would be any different for kids. And nothing seems to suggest it is.
Well, if you look at some of the media coverage recently, it was maybe about a month ago, there was some parents on the East Coast who let their children take a walk by themselves, and they're getting an unsubstantiated child neglect charge. So maybe the pressure is coming from places other than the parents themselves.
But now I think when you say other than the parents themselves, actually, I mean, what's fascinating about that particular case, which was in Silver Spring, Maryland, two kids of scientists, right, who embraced kind of the philosophy that a kid ought to be able to roam free, were walking home from a park, and they were not in any kind of imminent danger. They were picked up by the cops not because they were in danger, but because another parent had called the cops. So I think that actually, in a funny way, there's just this culture surrounding parenthood that's extremely burdensome, I think, for many of us. Jerome Kagan, the developmental psychologist who did like some of his best work in the 70s, in the, I guess, late 80s or early 90s, he wrote an essay that was very prescient. He said that in public life, there is almost no way to establish yourself as a moral person anymore. It used to be that we took care of our aging parents, so our neighbors could see how wonderful we were because we did this, or we were involved in neighborhood organizations and civic groups so everyone could see, that we were willing to make a difference. And civic participation has gone way down. We now, put our parents in old folks' homes and things like that. The only way to show our moral worth today is through our parenting. That's how we strut our plumage. And I think that that has created this culture of surveillance and judgment and censure rather than one of collaboration and, you know, helpfulness. And I think it's not doing any of us one lick of good.
Why do you say it's not doing us any good? I mean, I guess I'm not arguing that it is doing us good, but is it actually doing us harm?
Well, first of all, you have two kids who were picked up by the police, which is in and of itself like quite traumatizing, right? I don't think that helped them. Those kids were perfectly safe walking home. Their parents had made a perfectly rational calculation that in their extremely safe neighborhood, in broad daylight, after school, it was okay to walk home. You know? And instead, they were greeted by a police car. And the police themselves, and Child Protective Services themselves, could find absolutely nothing wrong. No imminent signs of danger. They came up with nothing. So to me, that's not doing anyone any good. It's suddenly scarring the kids. It's throwing into question for them whether or not their own parents have their best interests at heart. And it's kind of creating this incredibly weird, scary memory of a police car coming by and picking them up. I'm not sure I see how that works out. I mean, I think we'd be much better off if we were just simply mindful of kids on the street and made sure that they got to where they were supposed to be safely and all agreed that we were going to have our kids walking around in groups. I mean, I think that helps everyone. It helps them foster, like, a sense of independence, right? Then they actually feel like they're capable of doing something because, you don't want to inhibit them and think that they are capable of doing less than they are capable of doing. And it also, creates an esprit de corps among parents where they feel like they all have everybody's kids, in their sight lines and that they're all going to be helping out and pitching in.
Well, taking a look at that sight lines issue, that's something that's maybe changed over the past decade or so as you have more two parent families who have both parents working. And so, in other words, there's not someone who's watching the street at all times. Is that something that you see as changing things?
Yes, definitely. And I think that a lot of this is about anxiety about women actually being at work and the fact that there aren't as many eyes on the street. I think that that's certainly true. Nevertheless, when women were home, back in the 70s, kids were told to get on their bikes and to, not come home until supper time when they banged a gong. And back in 1969, 40% of all American kids were walking to school or biking to school, and now it's about 13%, so it's much lower. So I do think that there's certainly anxiety about it, but, just because parents are there doesn't mean that they're paying attention, by the way. It might just be a signifier of our anxiety, not like actually a material, not materially consequential in any way.
It's hard not to be critical of parents, no matter what the age is, because if you look at our parents' generation, in that time, you might say, oh, those parents neglected their kids. They didn't spend enough time with their children. They didn't play with their children.
Talking
to parents who said, my dad never played with me. Why does my kid want me to play with him or her? So, isn't there always some critique we're going to make? And maybe we just overcorrect it for the errors of the past.
There's definitely the thought that, like, maybe the needle is now just swinging the other way and that, we were all raised by a generation that looked maybe not quite like Betty Draper and Don Draper and Mad Men, where they're, like, tossing back vodka tonics and telling their kids to watch TV, but maybe something like that, and so we're going to be much more engaged. I mean, maybe, it's possible that it's compensatory, and certainly it's every human's instinct to gossip. I think that there are, I don't find this a particularly constructive form of criticism or gossip. I think that, telling your 10-year-old to walk home in broad daylight in one of the safest neighborhoods imaginable, it just doesn't strike me as a particularly dangerous thing. And I think having a bunch of, local gossips call the cops on you is just not particularly constructive or helpful.
We're talking right now to New York Magazine writer Jen Senior. She says we live in an age of irrational parenting, but at least we overblow the dangers to our children when it's actually a really safe time to be a kid. So, Jen, is this something that other countries, other cultures you see struggling with, or is this uniquely American somehow?
Not looked at data around. There's really a really beguiling chart in the UK that shows the same kind of shrinking circumference around a kid. That it used to be the kids could walk 6 miles if they were 8 years old, then they could walk one, and then they could walk a block. It's the same thing. But I don't know what that data looks like internationally, and I'd be very interested to see it. And of course, there are different norms in different cultures and different bikes, bike usages, and it's going to depend on cities versus countries. So, It's an interesting question. It's one I should look into more.
You were talking some about the morality issue earlier, that when we parent, and we parent maybe in an overly protective way, that it's somehow establishing our moral authority or our moral worth. Who is it, do you think, that we're trying to display that for?
Other parents. I mean, you know, think about what your Facebook feed looks like and all the weird kind of competitive tensions that are subtly kind of woven in. I mean, not in mine. I don't tend to follow or have friends like that. But, I mean, I think that people are, you know, and that's what Pinterest is kind of predicated on. I mean, there's a lot of ways that we are that I think a lot of parents want to establish, you know, how great they are at this. And, you know, I think anxiety about being a present parent, if you're working, is certainly one very poignant reason people might do it. You know, but again, like, I go back to the idea that we used to have other ways of showing this. When we were more involved in public institutions and at civic organizations and neighborhood organizations, and when we took care of our own aging parents, you know, people saw what we were doing and the kinds of, you know, family men and women that we were. And it's harder to see that now. We're all super busy and working a lot.
Well, we're talking right now with New York Magazine writer Jennifer Senior about why she says parents are overprotective when right now it's a safe time to be a kid. And we want you to weigh in on this. Do you see parents obsessively worrying about the safety of their children? Do you think parents today are irrational when it comes to the risks of childhood? And if you're a parent or a grandparent, what do you think? How do you behave with your kids? Are you super concerned about safety, or do you like to go a little more free range with your style? Call it 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're picking up our discussion with Jennifer Senior about how she says parents are disproportionately obsessed with the safety of their children today. And we're taking your calls. What do you think has contributed to an age of maybe irrational parenting? If you're a parent or a grandparent, how do you make sure your kids are safe without going overboard? Do you agree that parents are too obsessed with safety, or do you think it's a good idea to be vigilant? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We go to our callers now. We've got Peter on the line in Stoughton. Hi, Peter.
Good afternoon. I blame this helicopter parent routine or syndrome pretty much on the advent of the Internet. 20 years ago, if something happened, you might read about it in paper, and maybe your mother-in-law would send you an article about something like that. But now, well, you were referring to that couple who was investigated for letting their kids walk home from school, and I can't even remember where that was, but we wouldn't have known about that 20 years ago. So I think a lot of it is the information that gets distributed on the Internet that normally wouldn't have been seen not very long ago.
Hey, Peter, thanks a lot. And Jen, is there something to that? Does the sensational stuff tend to get passed around more?
Yeah, I think it's a great point. And this is something that I wrote about pretty extensively in my book, that I was really surprised by how many people were spooked by, number one, the 24/7 news cycle, which includes, of course, lots of stuff that you see on Facebook and the Internet as well, where, you know, one kidnapping story in one place, which gets, you know, kind of sensationally replayed over and over again, right, on cable news, becomes, it looks suddenly as if that's kind of normal and not an exceptional experience. That's one thing. The other thing about the Internet, I was surprised when a part of my book takes place in Texas, and I remember talking to all these mothers in Texas who are in these beautiful, ravishing, lushly landscaped neighborhoods. It couldn't have been nicer, upper middle class, and they wouldn't let their kids be on their front lawns. And Texas has a transparent, it's got an Internet sex offender registry. So you can see where all the sex offenders live in your neighborhood, and you'll find them. You know, that's what happens when you've got Internet transparency. They've always lived near you, but now we can know their addresses. And, you know, sex offender is a very kind of broad term, but doesn't matter, right? Like, you just immediately know exactly where their address is. You know it's a mile from your home, and you panic. So I agree completely. What's strange is that more information in this case, or exposure to more information in this case, doesn't necessarily make us behave more rationally.
Well, thank you for that call. We're going to go next to Felicia in Sun Prairie. Felicia, hi.
Hi. My question was, I have kids in the Sound Prairie school system, but when we were in Canada, we received paperwork that said that 30% of girls, or females rather, in the United States, up to, I believe, by the age of 21, 30% have been sexually assaulted, and 20% of boys. So my question is, how do you tell your kid, you know, I'm sorry I wasn't there to supervise you, this is why this happened to you, when you know that 30% of females, this is going to happen to?
Great point. Thanks, Felicia. And, you know, we hear all the time that knowledge is power. You have knowledge like that about the statistics. As a parent, you feel like you have an obligation to protect your kid and be there, don't you?
Yeah, of course, of course. Number one, there's a lot of kind of, I mean, there are conflicting bodies of statistics and data about exactly what about sexual assault rates. I don't want to get into whether or not those numbers are right or wrong, and I don't want to minimize or trivialize how very real that problem is. I will say this. Being sexually assaulted in broad daylight while coming home from school is much less of a problem than being sexually assaulted at a party that you yourself drove your kid to, or while your kid is home alone while you're not there with another kid. You know, those dangers tend to be from kids that other kids know, right? That's where things get very, I mean, bullying at the hands of other kids, assault at the hands of other kids, those are much realer dangers, but they are not about sending your kid outside. That's, you know, to me, those are separate questions. So she's raising a very profound and important point, and it's a much more devilish problem to contend with. But in my mind, it's because it's driven by, like, kids you know and trust, or parents of the kids that you know. I mean, this gets hairy very quickly, because we're not talking about, like, letting a kid walk home from a park most of the time.
Felicia, thank you for that call. We're talking right now to New York Magazine writer Jen Senior about how parents today tend to overestimate the amount of risk to their children. And we go next to a caller in Milwaukee. Linda's with us. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I was just listening, and I just listened in, but I'm wondering, your guest mentioned sex offenders, but I just saw a program about human trafficking, and they gave this huge number of how many persons go missing every year. And they talked about how it's not a safe world anymore to allow your children to just be out and about, because across all lines, children are being taken.
Thank you so much for calling with that, Linda. And yeah, we've got the sex offenders, we've got human traffickers, and we know all this because we watch TV and we read stuff on the internet. So as a parent, if you're the one who gets caught with your guard down, you're going to feel terrible. Is it better safe than sorry in this case?
I mean, I think that the human trafficking story was in the news because there's a bill right now, you know, in Congress about this very issue. You know, again, I would go back to the fact that the number of children who are abducted every year is still very, I mean, let's put it this way. It's much, 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 much more unsafe to get into a car with your kids, right? Much more unsafe. And the odds of getting into a car accident with your kids are much greater than your kid being, suddenly snatched away from you and shunted into some kind of sex trafficking ring. I mean, you know, these are not even comparable. You know, the odds are, it's probably much riskier for your kid to be on a bike. You know, it's much riskier. And unfortunately, and I'm not saying that these harms don't exist and that there isn't a small chance. I mean, in the way that there's a chance that I could slip and hurt myself in my bathtub, everything is associated with a certain level of risk. But this is, in a funny way, a little bit like what I was describing before, where I said we see a report on television and decide that it's emblematic of a larger trend, when in fact, actually, I'm sure that that piece was on TV because there's a sex trafficking bill right now in Congress that wants to penalize people who've actually, you know, wants to impose stricter fines on people who've been complicit and helped, and, you know, and it's now getting snagged in all kinds of, you know, Republicans and Democrats have different ideas about what they want to append to it. It's actually not really about the inherent harms of sex. I'm guessing that the impetus for that story wasn't about, oh, gee, oh, my God, the world is filled with sex traffickers.
And Jen, just in our last little bit of time here, just a few seconds, what should parents do if they want to loosen up this culture a little bit and give their kids more leash to roam on?
You know, I wonder if, like, you know, parents in particular neighborhoods ought to just start talking to one another and saying, why don't we all agree that today they're going to walk to each other's houses? You know, that they're going to, like, kind of go in gangs of three and four. You know, I mean, that's one possibility. You can have them walking with each other and checking in. You know, you can decide that, you know, your 11-year-olds are all going to walk somewhere as a group. I mean, there are small things you can just do, making the decision within your own neighborhood or with friends, with other friends, you know.
And we leave it there. Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
We were speaking with Jennifer Senior, the author of All Joy and No Fun, The Paradox of Modern Parenthood. She wrote about irrational parenting for New York Magazine.